Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm Lucy Dunn and today I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and More in Common pollster Luke Trill. It's been an incredibly eventful day and a half watching the results of the local elections across England come in. Nigel Farage's Reform Party is celebrating momentous gains across the country, taking control of councils, winning two new mayors and of course clinching the victory in the Runcorn and Helsby by-election. The Greens and Liberal Democrats have also made gains, but both Labour and the Conservatives fared pretty badly. Look, considering what the expectations were going into these elections, which party do you think had the worst night?
Well, look, if you look at the performance of both the Conservatives and Labour, they were both right at the bottom end, in fact, surpassing the bottom end for bad projection. So they certainly both had a bad night. But I think you've got to say that if you have to pick between the two, it is the Conservatives who had the worst night. And that is simply because these elections were being fought on true blue territory. You know, these are the Tory counties and shires, you know, places like Kent, Buckingham, Northumberland, you know, real bastions of Conservative strength. Staffordshire, where they went from having, I think it's 57 of the 62 seats to seeing Reform take control. And I think the reason it's bad is, A, it's bad in of itself, you know, losing all of those seats. But it also, because it was their heartland area, means an erosion of that Conservative infrastructure. So it's bad in of itself, but it's also going to be harder for them to recover as well.
And I suppose, Isabel, thinking about looking at how, you know, Reform have made gains in traditional Labour areas. So, you know, for example, taking control of Durham County Council, you know, a council that hosts the Miners' Gala, it suggests that Labour heartlands no longer feel much loyalty towards Starmer's party and that actually their working class voters are turning against them. Do you think that we're looking at the end of Labour as the party of the working class?
Yeah, I mean, we had this debate back in 2019, didn't we, when the red wall fell to the Conservatives in the general election. And I think since then, voters have not, they've not gone back to Labour in the sense that they've said, oh, that was a terrible mistake to vote Conservative. I'm never doing that again. I'm Labour. You know, that was an aberration. I'm back to Labour. I think they've just swung in a sort of, you know, I know you can't have a volatile pendulum. I'm not very good at science, but I know that they are so volatile that they've just had a pendulum swing back to Labour and they're perfectly prepared to go elsewhere. And that's what's happened. So they've then gone to Reform. And it just shows now that, and this is, I think this has not been the case for probably at least a decade in British politics. You cannot, as a party, call people our voters anymore because they're not. They're annoyed with everyone. They were annoyed with Labour in 2019. They were annoyed with the Conservatives last summer. They're now in the locals, annoyed with Labour. And the problem for the main parties is that it is not a pendulum swing anymore because there's Reform. And they are achieving things that UKIP were not able to achieve. They have a message that UKIP didn't have. And they have very successfully pitched themselves to the left of Labour on certain things, particularly the welfare state. And I've been fascinated by everything that Luke's been saying over the past few days about not just the impact of the winter fuel payment cut, which, you know, a lot of MPs and a lot of candidates, even successful candidates, have been citing as a reason for voters being really angry with them on the doorstep when they were out campaigning. But the prospect of future benefit cuts has cut through massively. And I'm fascinated by that because I started out as a political journalist in 2010 when the public could not get enough of welfare cuts. I mean, genuinely, there was nothing George Osborne couldn't propose that the public wouldn't go, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever. And now we actually, under a Labour government, seem to have reached the saturation point. And that is absolutely fascinating.
I suppose, yeah, look, thinking about what Isabel just said about that general voter annoyance with everyone, you've spent a lot of time in focus groups. You know, what do you think is driving this sense of disillusionment?
I think it is genuinely, and I don't want to sound hyperbolic, but a sort of profound sense that Britain isn't working. The people we speak to will say, you know, the cost of living crisis hasn't ended. that I'm living to work, working to live. I constantly hear variations of all of the fun things in life are gone now because I can't afford them. And that has a profound effect on the public mood. The NHS, I think there's some signs in focus groups it might be getting a little bit better, but I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but it's still not in a good place. And the reason that really hits the national mood is it's the one institution people say we're really proud of. So it's not just I can't get an appointment and I'm worried about that. It's this is our thing and it's not working for us as well. So you've got that. And then you've got this sense that, you know, as Isabel was saying, people keep pressing that change button. You know, they say 2016 Brexit, I want change. 2017 Corbyn surge, I want change. 2019 Boris Johnson. 2024 Labour, I want change. And they're not getting it. And I do think, you know, to build on what Isabel was saying, Labour, part of it is, you know, and some people are willing to give Labour the benefit of the doubt, but others frustrated at the slow pace of change. And then it's some of those specific decisions. So winter fuel, yes. And just to build on what Isabel was saying about disability benefit cuts, because you're entirely right. You know, from a public opinion perspective, we've all always been told, you know, go harder, go faster, you'll get the public on side. I think what Labour have missed here, and this is what I'm picking up in the focus groups, is when it comes to PIP and disability benefits, you do still get people saying, yeah, no, there are too many people claiming it and, you know, we need to do something about mental health. But when it comes to PIP, everyone has a story of someone that they know who gets it and they think deserves it. And that's the real difference here. It's people saying, oh, well, you know, I know that mum and she cares for her kid. And I don't know what she'd do without it. Or, you know, my sister needs it for this. And we know in politics, the most powerful thing are real stories. It's one of the reasons that Partygate was so powerful, because people had stories of what they had missed during the pandemic. And that's what you're seeing with PIP. So I think it's that combination that things are bad, things aren't getting better, but then the added layer, and I think this is what makes it, you know, and I'll say quite freely, I think quite apocalyptic in terms of the public mood, that our politicians aren't up to or willing to make it better, has created this perfect storm.
And Isabel, you know, looking at Starmer's Labour government, you know, thinking about the change measures that we saw last year that got that supermajority voted in, only 10 months in now, and this is what the local elections have turned out. So where does Starmer go from here and what are the lessons to be learned?
Yeah, I mean, I thought his response in the hours as the results came through yesterday morning was interesting. And he's repeated it again today with his "I get it" line. I've heard that so many times from politicians who all think that they're sounding kind of original when they say it. And I mean, in fact, he also said, well, I could do what politicians normally do and say, and then he said exactly what he wanted to say, which was, you know, to kind of do the, you know, this is a difficult time and we are making progress, and list all the things where he was making progress. But I'm not going to do that, even though he had just done it. And he then says, you know, I get the message. Voters came for change last year. We now need to go further and faster with that change. But what I think is really interesting is the reaction from Labour MPs and councillors, ex-councillors, you know, mayoral candidates and so on. They seem to think the further and faster thing is not a good thing, because they think that at the moment the party's heading in the wrong direction. And what Starmer is saying is, I'm going to put my foot down on the accelerator and whiz towards it faster, and in their view, you know, end up in a ditch. And so to a certain extent, I think the response from a lot of people in Labour has either been to say, you need to change direction, or to say, we'll go further and faster towards what? What are you actually aiming for? What are the defining things of this government? Because one of the problems they've had, and you know, we've talked a lot already about welfare cuts in this podcast, and that's because it's one of the defining things so far. And actually, you know, if you ask people, and Luke has been doing this, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Luke, but I imagine most of your focus group people, if you say, what have they done since coming into power, they'll say, oh, they've cut winter fuel. They won't say, oh, they've launched a consultation to improve the planning system or something like that. That, you know, a lot of the stuff that Labour wants to achieve takes a long time. Some of it they're managing to move ahead with in terms of cutting NHS waiting lists and stuff. But people don't really care about that because they're still on a waiting list. And they, you know, those numbers which we often see traded across the Commons at Prime Minister's questions are always meaningless to voters until they have a tangible sense that, and I suppose even if they're not on a waiting list, a tangible faith that if they get sick, they're going to get treated as in a timely fashion. So, you know, it is difficult because Starmer has defined his government in a very awkward way. And to a certain extent, maybe the message that he could privately be taking would be not we need to go further and faster. It's we need to do something that voters can say, oh, they've done this already, that is positive rather than taking money away from granny.
And I think, you know, looking at parties that maybe we've not discussed so much, you know, Ed Davies, Liberal Democrats, gained control of 3 councils, whilst the Conservatives lost all 18 that they were defending. You know, look, we've talked before about how Labour has maybe not paid attention to its left flank so much in the last couple of months. But do you think that, yes, these results suggest that the Tories are facing the same issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, we know that if the Tories are going to come back to power, they have to win back a chunk of those votes that they lost to the right and Reform UK. But they've also got to win back some of the votes that they lost to the left. They, you know, they lost more votes to Labour and the Lib Dems combined between 2019 and 2024 than they did to Reform. And I think they ignore that at their peril. Some of the solutions, I think, to getting them back actually are the same. It's about demonstrating you're competent, that you get it, that you can run a country, which people have lost faith in by the end of the last government. But if you look at some of those results, one of them I particularly point to is Devon County Council election, because what you see is the Tories previously control the council. They lose a whole swathe of seats to Reform UK on their right. They lose a whole swathe of seats to the Liberal Democrats on the centre and the left, and you end up with this slither of conservatism left in the middle. You know, the Liberal Democrats across the south of England sort of eating the Tories' lunch, places like Oxfordshire, Hertfordshire, making gains in Buckinghamshire. And I think the risk for the Tories now, the sort of comparison I would make is with the French Republicans, is that they find themselves going from Nicolas Sarkozy and party of the presidency to a rump. And I think that is a very real risk. But I also think Labour has to look at voters on its left. You know, Labour, again, since the election, is losing an equal number of voters to parties of the left and parties of the right. Weirdly, it's almost a sort of mirror of what happened to the Boris Johnson coalition. And again, to come back to what Isabel was saying, I think part of what is driving that is disillusionment with early measures. And when you look, we created this sort of grid where we measure how much a policy is cut through by how popular it is. And actually, Labour has lots of popular announcements and policies, workers' rights, renters' rights, sewage, the minimum wage. You know, they might annoy Tories and people on the right, but with their base, they're popular. But on the cut-through measure, they are far lower than the unpopular policies, which are winter fuel, disability benefit cuts, farmers' inheritance tax and NICs. And they have drowned everything out. And Isabel is entirely right. If I ask people to name the policies which define the government, they're those ones in that quadrant of doom at the bottom, not the ones which people quite like.
And Isabel, just to sort of wrap up on that note, I suppose, you know, does Labour have ultimately a communication problem? Is that what is letting the party down when it looks at what it's done so far, but how it's not really cutting through with voters?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, they clearly thought they have had a communication problem because they have changed their personnel in number 10. So, you know, quite recently, James Lyons came in, Matthew Doyle has left. And they have been trying to, particularly when it comes to kind of new or unconventional non-mainstream media, change the way they talk. But I think you can end up looking at all the sort of people and systems that are problems within the party and saying, oh, you know, Rachel Reeves is very unpopular, she's not going to row back on this, or I don't know, Ed Miliband keeps upsetting voters in Aberdeen because he suggests he wants to shut down their job, all of this stuff. You can go round and round and round, but I think the problem is the guy in the middle, Keir Starmer, who actually still just does not communicate well. And he doesn't do enough of the, you know, if you're going to have the Chancellor as bad cop, because they always have to be bad cop, then you have to have good cop. And I'd say that good cop Starmer is very weak and still quite boring. And I think that's another one of these issues with going back to the going further and faster, is that he didn't then say what they were going further and faster towards, apart from change. And it allows people to fill the gap with their own, you know, horror version of what Labour's going to be going towards, more benefit cuts or whatever, as opposed to, you know, going back to some of the very effective communicators in politics, Boris Johnson or Donald Trump. You always know what they're going to do next, and they spell it out in very simple language. And Starmer has not managed to do that. You know, his vision speech a few months ago, he ended up talking about pillars, which is just not, it's not clear or inspiring, or, I mean, I still don't know what he was talking about. And I had to watch the whole thing. So the idea that the public are going to be like, oh, well, now we know. Yeah, fine, great. He's heading towards these pillars. I just think, you know, I'm being a bit facetious, but I also think that one of the issues is that it's the guy in the middle who doesn't really know what he wants to do on lots of things other than change them and do them better than the Tories.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, Luke. And thank you for listening.